We've been talking about covenants, and I'd like to continue that thought. I had quite a bit of material that I wanted to present, actually aiming for the next lesson that I'm going to do, which a little bit different take on covenants, but I'd like to get this also straight out. Last week, we basically talked about covenants that were existing mostly between people. But this week, what I'd like to do is talk about the ones that God set apart. Covenants always played a major role in the Scriptures. And we have to understand that covenants are not just promises. They're not, you know, like for instance saying, well, I plan to be there next week. That's not a covenant. They're not even solemn oaths. I promise I'll get this done. That's not even close to what a covenant is. Covenants basically created a binding relationship between people, whether that relationship already existed or became in existence because of the covenant. The covenant was more like a treaty, pulling people together to act as one. Now, in order to understand it, we need to start looking at what parts of a covenant are. What really makes something a covenant? People have analyzed not only the covenants in the Bible, but also covenants made in other countries and other parts of the world, because it is a widespread thing that happened in mankind's past. The Hittites had covenants. The Assyrians had covenants. And they came up with a list of what they saw as typical parts of a covenant. Not every covenant necessarily had all these parts, but most of them tend to go along with these ideas. First off, in a covenant, there's identification of the parties involved. Covenants weren't just open-ended, wide open, anybody could join in type of thing. Usually it was spelled out, this is who's involved in this covenant, who's doing the covenant making. Then along with that, oftentimes a covenant gives a brief history of the people's relationship so far. It explains why maybe the covenant was deemed as being necessary. So either we'll talk about the fact that they had problems in the past or the fact that there were friendships in the past. There's a reason why we're establishing a covenant. Then there was the obligations spelled out. This is what we would normally think about as the covenant itself. It's saying, here's what I'm going to do and here's what you're going to do. Or not going to do, depending on what's being talked about here. This is where the people entering the covenant agree to do certain things. The design of the covenants are that these obligations were beneficial to both parties. Don't look at a covenant as saying, well, hey, these are just commands, you have to do this, otherwise you're in trouble. That's not what they were for there. There were obligations that both sides would do because it was mutually beneficial to everybody involved. It's not a list of demands subjugating people. Then there were expected benefits. Oftentimes they were listed out. Here's what's going to happen if you follow this covenant. Here's the things that are going to get better because of it. Or also it could list out what might be the consequences from breaking the covenant. That's sometimes spelled out. If you don't do this, here's how things are going to fall apart. Then there were provisions for remembering the covenant, or reminders, or both, that the people are in fellowship with one another. So for instance, sometimes a meal was shared between the people that both reminded and showed fellowship. And then there were oaths that were made to a higher power that they're going to fulfill that covenant. Oftentimes those oaths were sealed with blood sacrifices to that higher power. Now with those oaths, just because, you know, a covenant just didn't happen. You had witnesses to the covenant who would be able to testify that that covenant existed, that people were involved in it. And then once entered, covenants could not be broken. Take a look at Galatians chapter 3. Galatians chapter 3, verse 15. Brethren, I speak in terms of human relations. Even though it is only a man's covenant, yet when it has been ratified, no one sets it aside or adds conditions to it. Once a covenant is in place, it's seen as being permanent. You don't afterwards say, you know what, I changed my mind, let's change the terms. Or skip this part, it's just not working out well. Covenants were seen as something that was binding and stayed binding. Now when God made covenants, we talked about man's covenants last time, but when God made covenants, they were slightly different from man's covenants. Well, one aspect of it, obviously, is that part of the making of a covenant is you swore an oath by a higher power. Well, there is no higher power than God. So when God entered a covenant, there wasn't a swearing by a higher power because he is the highest power. So God gave oaths by himself. Take a look at Hebrews chapter 6. Hebrews chapter 6 and in verse 13. For when God made the promise to Abraham, since he could swear by no one greater, he swore by himself. So what we're going to do is look at a few of the covenants that God entered with mankind. And some of these covenants are still in effect. Like, for instance, this particular covenant. This is a covenant that was made after the flood that God made with mankind and with the world. In Genesis chapter 9 are the terms that are spelled out. Genesis chapter 9. And starting with verse 9. It says, now behold, I myself do establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you, and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the cattle, and every beast of the earth with you, all of that comes out of the ark, every beast of the earth. Who's a party to this covenant? God's saying, I am establishing it. And who also is involved? It's with Noah, his descendants, all the beasts that come out of the ark, and their descendants as well. It's with between Noah, his descendants, all living creatures, and their descendants. Do we have those parties still involved? The answer is yes. God's still here. We're all descendants of Noah. The world's still populated by the animals that came off the ark. There were certain obligations that God said he would set up. In chapter 8, starting with verse 21, it says, the Lord smelled the soothing aroma, and the Lord said to himself, I will never again curse the ground on account of man, for the intent of man's heart is evil from his youth, and I will never again destroy every living thing as I have done. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. Here's the terms that God said I'm going to obligate myself to. I'm not going to destroy mankind like I did before. Mankind, yes, is evil. That's a given now. But I'm not going to destroy the world because of that. Now, as long as the world remains, he didn't promise that he wouldn't eventually end the world. But as long as the world remains, there's the seasons are going to continue. He's not going to interrupt the seasons, the days, the cycles, or anything else. Now notice also there's a brief history here, because he mentions the fact that mankind had sinned. Here's the reason for this covenant. Now also in chapter 9, starting with verse 1, it says, God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. The fear of you and the terror of you will be on every beast of the earth and on every bird of the sky, with everything that creeps on the ground and all the fish of the sea. Into your hands they are given. Every moving thing that is alive shall be food for you. I give all to you, as I gave the green plant. Only you shall not eat flesh with its life, that is its blood. Surely I will require your lifeblood from every beast, I will require it, and from every man, and from every man's brother, I will require the life of man. Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed, for in the image of God he made man. As for you, be fruitful and multiply, repopulate the earth abundantly, and multiply in it. Animals were given the fear of man. Man is now allowed to eat meat, so long as he doesn't eat blood. And man is to punish murder with death. These are some of the obligations that God expected. So these are things that God's giving, and also some of the obligations that God expects out of man, too. That we are now responsible for taking care of murderers. Whether it happens by animals causing murder or men causing murder, the same penalty is to be invoked. And for that, God again promises in verse 11 of chapter 9, I establish my covenant with you. All flesh shall never again be cut off from the waters of the flood. Never shall there again be a flood to destroy the earth. God will not flood the earth again like he did before. There are also blessings. We already read those, where twice God tells them, be fruitful and multiply. You'll have the world for your dominion. Now we need also then reminders. What's interesting, this is one that we still remember. Partly because of the scriptures, but it's something that we all remember. In Genesis chapter 9, verse 12, God said, this is a sign of the covenant that I'm making between me and you and every living creature that is with you, all successive generations. I set my bow in this cloud, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. It shall come about when I bring a cloud over the earth that the bow will be seen in the cloud, and I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. And never again will the waters become a flood to destroy all flesh. When I look upon it, remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature, all flesh that is on the earth. So the rainbow that we look at is a reminder that that covenant exists. Since the obligations are basically on God's part, God is saying that this is a reminder to him. Not that God's going to forget. But it helps us remember that God's going to remember. And so therefore it becomes a reminder, it's a record of the fact that covenant exists. And of course there's also the oath, the promise. We read most of it there. But it, as like I said, a lot of times it goes with along with the sacrifice. And that's actually mentioned in chapter 8, in verse 20. It says, Noah built an altar to the Lord and took every clean animal of every clean bird and offered burnt offering on the altar. This was the seal, the covenant. This was the oath that was being made. Even though it was God who was making the oath, Noah offered the sacrifice for that. And that covenant is still in effect. And we have to remember that. You know, we have people that, you know, panic and say, oh, the world's going to change and we're going to lose our seasons and stuff like that. No, God made a promise. God made a covenant that this is going to continue as long as he keeps the world here. And it will not end. That's a part of God's covenants. It makes a binding treaty that lasts as long as both parties exist. Now there was another covenant that was made with Abram. Again, the parties are spelled out. This particular covenant was done at two different times. And so we're going to be flipping back and forth between Genesis 15 and Genesis 17. Though we do have a couple passages in Hebrews because there's some commentary about the covenant elsewhere. But in Genesis 15 and verse 7, it says, "And he said to him, I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldeans to give you the land, this land to possess it." Who's involved in this? God says, "I am the God who sent you here. Brought you out of Ur and sent you here." This is not so he's basically spelling out, I'm not claiming to be any other God but the God, the one who gave you this. And in chapter 17 in verse 1, it says, "When Abraham was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to Abram and said to him, I am God Almighty. Walk before me and be blameless." Here again, he identifies himself. I'm God the Almighty. And in chapter 17, verse 7, God also says, "I will establish my covenant between me and you and your descendants after you throughout their generations for an everlasting covenant to be your God and you to be to you and to your descendants after you." So God again is saying, here's my covenant. It's between me and you and your descendants. So this the other party is Abraham and all his descendants. Not for the rest of the world. This is just for Abram and his descendants. Now there is a history of the being brought out. Again, it was back in chapter 15, verse 7. God has already been involved in Abram's life. He's the one who brought him out of Ur of Chaldees. He's the one who brought him into this new land. And so that's recounted for us. And there's some obligations. Back in chapter 17, verse 1, God said that not only that he's God Almighty, but he says, "Walk before me and be blameless." Here's an obligation that God's placing on Abram. You have to follow after me and not be found blameful, I guess, for not being obedient. He's asking for obedience from him. He's asking for loyalty from him. Down in verse 8 of chapter 17, there's another obligation. And this time is on God. God says, "I will give you and your descendants after you the land of your sojournings, all the land of Canaan, for an everlasting possession, and I will be their God." Here's another obligation God says, "I'm going to give you this land." That's quite a promise. If you think about it, here's a man who's at this time is in 99. He's been walking. He's a foreigner. Doesn't even own any land in this territory. And God says, "I'm going to give you all of this to your descendants, to you and your descendants." Quite a promise is being made here. And now in verse 16. He says, "I will bless her, and indeed I will give you a son by her. Then I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of people will come from her." And so not only is he going to have inherit land, but he's going to become a great nation. Not just one nation, he's basically multiple ones. Princes, kings will come and descend from him because of that. Now, like any other covenant, there needs to be a record of it. There needs to be reminders of it that exists. One of the interesting ones is in chapter 17, verse 5. God says, "No longer shall your name be called Abram, but your name shall be Abraham, for I made you a father of a multitude of nations." God says, "Hey, I'm going to make you a lots of descendants, multiple nations are going to come from you. Because of that, you're going to change your name." Abram means father. Abraham means father of a multitude. And so God says, "You're going to change your name." So by his calling himself by Abraham, is a constant reminder that God made a promise that he's going to have a multitude of descendants. Along with that, his wife Sarai also had her name changed. In chapter 17, verse 15, so God said to Abraham, "As for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her Sarai, but Sarah shall be her name." So again, here's our constant reminder that this covenant is in place. They won't forget this, because this is the new names. But there was another reminder as well for their descendants. And it's in chapter 17, verse 10. It says, "This is my covenant which I shall, that you shall keep between me and you and your descendants after you. Every male among you shall be circumcised, and you shall be circumcised in the flesh of your foreskin, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and you. Every male among you who is 8 days old shall be circumcised throughout your generations. A servant who is born in the house, or is bought with money from any foreigner who is not your descendants, a servant who is born in your house, or is brought with money, shall surely be circumcised. Thus shall my covenant be in your flesh for an everlasting covenant." So here's in the promise. This is a sign. How do you know that covenant exists? Because of the circumcision. That became a permanent sign that the covenant was in it. And anyone who's brought into this covenant, there's terms here that allow bringing other people in, but required them to take on the sign of the covenant. Now, as far as witnesses, God, as we read earlier in Hebrews chapter 6, 13 and 14, God swore by himself. Now, let's go back there because I didn't read verse 14 prior. Hebrews chapter 6. Starting with verse 13, it says, "For when God made a promise to Abraham, since he could swear by no one greater, he swore by himself, saying, 'I will surely bless you and will surely multiply you.' And so, having patiently waited, he obtained the promise." So God made the promise, and Abraham took on the obligations. And that promise was sworn by God himself. So he became the witness to that covenant as well. There were consequences back in chapter 17, verse 14, if they didn't follow God's covenant. It says, "But the uncircumcised male who is not circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin, that person will be cut off from his people. He has broken my covenant." If you don't accept this, you're not a part of this. So there's consequences to that. And there's an oath, and that's back in chapter 15. Abram at this time, had sacrificed animals, cut them in half. Starting with verse 9. Genesis 15, starting with verse 9. "So he said, 'Bring me a three-year-old heifer, a three-year-old female goat, and a three-year-old ram, and a turtle dove, and a young pigeon.' Then he brought these to him and cut them in two, laid each half opposite the other, but he did not cut the birds. The birds of the prey came down upon the carcasses, and Abram drove them away. Now when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abram, and behold, terror and a great darkness fell upon him. God said to Abram, 'Know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in the land that's not theirs, where they will be enslaved and oppressed 400 years. But I will also judge the nation that they will serve, and afterwards they will come out with many possessions. As for you, you will go to your fathers in peace. You will be buried at a good old age. Then in the fourth generation they will return here, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete.' When it came about the sun had set, it was very dark, and behold, there was appeared a smoking oven and a flaming torch that passed between these pieces. On that day the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, 'To your descendants I give this land, from the river of Egypt, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates.'" God made a covenant, and it was God himself who walked between the pieces, showing that he was binding himself by that covenant. One other one we're going to look at is a covenant God made with Israel. That's the one we call the Old Law. probably one of the most famous covenants that God made. Again spells out who is involved. This time we go to Exodus 19. Exodus 19, starting with verse 3. Moses went up to God, and the Lord said, called to him from the mountain, saying, "Thus you shall say to the house of Israel, or Jacob, and tell the sons of Israel, you yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians, how I bore you on eagle's wings, and brought you to myself. Now then, you will obey my voice and keep my covenant, that you shall be my own possession among all the peoples, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. And these are the words that you shall speak to the sons of Israel." God's basically laying out, here is who is involved. You, the people that I brought out of Egypt. And again, he recounts the history. I brought you out like on eagle's wings. I rescued you like no one else could. In chapter 20 and in verse 2, God identifies himself. "I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery." And that covenant is limited. Over in Deuteronomy chapter 4, Deuteronomy 4 and verse 7, said, "For what great nation is there that has a God so near to it as the Lord our God, whenever we call upon him? Or what great nation is there that has statutes and judgments as righteous as this whole law which I'm setting before you today?" Basically what Moses is saying, there is no other nation that has this. This is a covenant that's between you and God. Nobody else has anything like this. Over in chapter 5, starting with verse 1, "Then Moses summoned all Israel to him and said to them, 'Hear, O Israel, the statutes and ordinances that I'm speaking today in your hearing, that you may learn them and observe them carefully. The Lord our God made a covenant with us at Horeb. The Lord did not make this covenant with our fathers, but with us, with all those who are alive here today.'" So many people don't understand this. They talk about, well, the covenant was existing beforehand. No. Moses said it started here at Horeb, and the people are still alive. Right after this, it goes into the Ten Commandments. This was a part of the covenant that was being made. People said, oh, this applied to everyone. It was supposed to be for the Greeks too. No. This was made for the Israelites. It was a very specific covenant. The history is recounted both, we already seen that in 19 and 20. God reminds them, "I'm the one who brought you out of slavery. I've already benefited you in the past, and I'm extending that benefit to the future." There are obligations. Going back to Exodus 19, you could say the whole law is the obligation, but in Exodus 19 and in verse 5, "So now then, if you will obey my voice and keep my commandment, then you shall be my own possession among all the peoples, for all the earth is mine." The obligation was to obey God's commandments. Also in chapter 20, and in verse 3, it says, "You shall have no other gods before me," is the beginning of the Ten Commandments. Here is a list of the summary of the things that they were required to do. Now there was reminders as well. In Exodus 24, it mentions that Moses wrote down the terms of the covenant. Exodus 24 verse 3 says, "Then Moses came and recounted to the people all the words of the Lord and all the ordinances, and all the people answered with one voice, saying, 'All the words which the Lord has spoken we will do.' And Moses wrote down all the words of the Lord. Then he rose up early in the morning, built an altar at the foot of the mountain with 12 pillars for the 12 tribes of Israel." So all the words were written down. and recorded. Not just the Ten Commandments, but all the other rules and regulations that God gave them as well. The people all heard them and they said, we will do this. This is their oath. But in chapter 25, then verse 16, it says, you shall put into the ark the testimony that I gave you, that I will give you. So there was the tablets of stone with the Ten Commandments that God was going to record, and that would be stored in an ark, in a box. And in chapter 40 of Exodus, and in verse 20, then he took the testimony and put it into the ark and attached the poles to the ark and put the mercy seat on top of the ark. So the ark contained a copy of the terms of the covenant. It was a record. So we got a permanent record written on stone, stored in a box so it would be protected. There was also another type of reminder, and that was with a fellowship meal. Go back to Exodus 24. We've seen a lot of the meals that were done between men and men. Isaac and Laban sitting down with their men at various feasts. But in Exodus 24, and starting with verse 9, then Moses went up with Aaron and Nadab and Abihu and 70 of the elders of Israel. And they saw the God of Israel, and under his feet there appeared to be pavement of sapphire, as clear as the sky itself. Yet he did not stretch out his hand against the nobles and the sons of Israel. They saw God, and they ate and drank. God invited representatives of the people to come up, and before him they not only saw God, but they also ate in his presence. And that became a reminder, a term of saying they were in fellowship. There was another meal also, though, that was a reminder, and that was in Deuteronomy 16. Deuteronomy chapter 16, and in verse 3. It says, you shall not eat unleavened bread with it. 7 days you shall eat with it, unleavened bread, the bread of affliction, for you came out of the land of Egypt in haste, so that you may remember all the days of your life, the day when you came out of the land of Egypt. For 7 days no leaven shall be with you in all your territory, and none of the flesh of your sacrifice on the evening of the first day shall remain overnight until morning. You shall not allow the sacrifice of the Passover in any of your towns, which the Lord your God has given you, but at the place where the Lord your God has chosen to establish his name, you shall sacrifice the evening the Passover in the evening at sunset, at the time you came out of Egypt. You shall cook and eat it in the place which the Lord your God chooses. In the morning you are to return to your tents. 6 days eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a solemn assembly to the Lord your God. You shall do no work. The Passover meal was a reminder, both of their coming out of Egypt, but it was also a reminder that they were under a covenant. Jumping ahead into 2 Kings chapter 23. 2 Kings 23 and in verse 21. 2 Kings 23. Verse 21, it says, then the king commanded all the people, saying, celebrate the Passover of the Lord your God, as is written in this book of the covenant. The Passover feast that they had every year, they were all together at one place, at one city. They ate that meal together, in a sense, in that one place. And it was a reminder of the covenant. They also had another reminder, it's found in Exodus 31 and verse 16. Once a year wasn't enough for God in this particular case. Exodus 31 and verse 16. It says, so the sons of Israel shall observe the Sabbath, to celebrate the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. The Sabbath celebration, where they had the sacrifices and they did no work, that also was a perpetual reminder of the covenant. So they would not forget. They had a weekly reminder they were under a covenant. They had a yearly reminder that they were under a covenant, as well as the law being with them as a reminder that they had a covenant. There are witnesses to that covenant. Not only were the people there alive being witness of the covenant, but of course they would die off eventually. So there were more permanent witnesses in Deuteronomy 4, verse 26. Deuteronomy 4, verse 26, I call heaven and earth to witness against you today, that you shall perish quickly from the land where you're going over the Jordan to possess it. Heaven and earth were called as witness to this covenant. And of course, there was also the copy of the law as a witness in Deuteronomy 31, verse 26. Take this book, the law, and place it beside the Ark of the Covenant of your God, that it remain there as a witness against you. There were consequences. The chapter 27, we won't take time to read it, but in Deuteronomy 27, starting with verse 15 and going to 26, there's a whole long list of consequences. Here are the curses that will come upon you if you don't keep the law. In Exodus 23, and again, we won't take time to read all of this, but in Exodus 23, from 20 to 33, and also in Deuteronomy 28, there's a long list of here's all the blessings. Here are all the nice things that are going to happen if you follow this covenant. You could say it's all summarized in Deuteronomy 28, starting with verse 19. Deuteronomy 28, starting with verse 19. And 20. It said, cursed shall be you when you go out and when you go in. Cursed shall you be when you go out. The Lord will send on you curses and confusions and rebukes in you, in all you understand to do, until you are destroyed, until you perish quickly on account of the evil of your deeds, because you have forsaken me. God's reminding you, you've got to keep the terms of this covenant, no matter what. And there, of course, was the oath. Again, going back to Exodus 24. Exodus 24 and verse 7. Then he took the book of the covenant and read it in the hearing of the people, and they said, all the Lord has spoken, we will do, and we will be obedient. So Moses took the blood and sprinkled it on the people and said, behold, the blood of the covenant which the Lord has made with you in accordance with all these words. So here's the solemn oath, here's the sacrifice, here's the shedding of blood to solemnize the fact that they entered a covenant with God. And notice how God described it. You shall be my people. Is establishing a relationship between the people and God. Now we're going to pause here because we've got lots still to talk about. But we'd like to offer an opportunity as we're gathered together. There's no better time than right now to put on Christ, to be a part of the covenant that we have in the New Testament. We'll talk about that a little more in detail tonight. But also, we have an opportunity as people of God's people that when we do something wrong, that we can pray for one another. And if there's anyone here who wishes the prayers of the brethren on their behalf, why don't you come forward, you stand and sing the song that was selected.